morning and welcome to The Breakfast Show on Faith FM with Scappy and Lindsay. This is the best place to start your day with positive and uplifting thoughts. You're listening across Australia on 87.6, 87.8 or 88 depending on where you are. Or you can listen to us through our Faith FM app anywhere in the world. It is the 26th of August, Wednesday, if you're listening live today. And I am in the studio with my friend, Josh. How are you going, Josh?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. And how are you, Shell? Shell, my favorite producer, Shell.
Your only producer, Shell.
Exactly. Yeah. How are you going, girl?
I am okay.
You're looking cute in that top.
I'm feeling sad with the news that we just heard about Dolly Parton, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty sad. We'll be talking a bit more about that coming up today for all of us who are sad about Dolly Parton. But before we get into the sad things, we want to start off with our gratitudes for today. So who wants to get going and share a gratitude?
I think I'll go last.
You want to go last.
Oh, okay. Lucky last for Josh.
Maybe first.
I can go first. So I had a doctor's appointment yesterday and had just a really great Bible study beforehand with my doctor's wife, who
really
is his receptionist. Yeah. So they listen to Faith FM sometimes.
Oh, awesome. And
yeah. So she was talking about pretty much one of our topics from yesterday, which was, I guess, ghosts and visitations from the dead and whatnot. Yeah. And so I was able to be like, well, what do you think about this verse? And what do you think about this verse then? Yeah. You know, and how do you,
how do you reconcile
and so,
that?
Yeah, that's right. And so we were able to delve into it a bit.
Awesome. Yeah.
And she's like, oh, my husband's actually with a pastor right now. When he comes out, we can ask him some questions. So then, yeah, so he there came out as well, and we talked for a little bit more.
Wow. Hey, nice. that's basically the idea of witnessing wherever you go out in public, right? Just connecting with people and seeing what their spiritual needs are and being able to have a conversation that's biblically grounded and say, hey, have you ever thought of this?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no, excellent. That's so good. Congratulations. Yeah.
What about you?
What about me? So I was just thinking, you know, I had a really lovely weekend. I know we're already in Wednesday right now, but I had, like, there was a concert on Saturday night, and it was a Light the Night concert at Avondale University, and it was all orchestra and some beautiful, beautiful music. And some of the songs that they were playing, some of the pieces, reminded me of, like, my childhood listening to opera music in the car with my mom whenever she'd drive places. She really liked Amici, the opera band. And so I've been reliving some of those songs overnight, just thinking, oh man, I love these songs. I can't believe I forgot about them for such a long time until Saturday night. So yeah, it's just been uplifting with a lot of beautiful music the last few days.
I think there's more to it because I saw Lindsay and she had company.
Don't tell them that.
No, I'm just going to leave it there. I'm just going to leave it there. I saw her and she had company. We'll leave it there.
That was also quite nice.
Oh, very good. What about you, Josh?
Well, I'll be honest. I had a bit of some minor surgery yesterday, and it's a huge relief. I'm so happy about it. So it's been 5 years coming.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was done yesterday, and I'm happy.
Amazing. Oh, very good.
Yeah.
So good. How are you feeling at the moment with the surgery? Is it a bit sore still?
Yeah, I'm a bit sore, but I'm grateful that, you know, it's
finally happened.
Yeah.
And healing can start now.
Yes.
Yep.
So
wonderful.
Good. Okay. Well, in today's show, we have got a number of interesting topics we're going to be talking about. We're going to be looking at Esther chapter 6 about Haman's plot against Mordecai being foiled.
Again,
we're going to get into that. We're going to be looking at strong gambling reforms in New South Wales. That's a great story coming out of New South Wales at the moment. Dolly Parton died at the age of 80. I believe it was overnight at some point. I'm going to be talking about that as well. And we're going to be interviewing Jennifer Skews about dealing with anger. And we'll be looking at stewardship and faithfulness in 1 Corinthians chapter 16.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
All right, let's get into the quiz, shall we, please?
Indeed, let's have one. Our first one for today is, what did Jesus say we must do if we want to bear much fruit? You can find that answer in John 15. What did Jesus say we must do if we want to bear much fruit? We've got a correct answer from Josh. Well done. I don't know what you're thinking, Lindsay.
like a grain.
All right. Lindsay wrote down die. So I'm not sure where she's coming from, Lindsay, but the grain has to like break open and it that's has to how it can
fall to the ground and die before it can bear much fruit, right?
That might be the case.
That's what Jesus said. Are we talking about a different thing that Jesus said about the same thing in a different place?
Give us another one. That's
yeah, I'm not sure that he says it in that context, but if you can show it to me, you can have the point. Okay, what did Jesus say we must do if we want to bear much fruit? Okay.
Look, I'll try this one instead.
You can find the answer in John chapter 15, anyways, verse 4 and 5. Now you got it.
Yeah. It was a different analogy for the same type of thing.
Okay.
Okay, rightio. Yeah. Okay. Well,
I got to give the phone number.
Yeah.
0491-064-669. 0491-064-669 is our text line for you to play along with us. You can look it up if you wanted to as well from John 15 there. But what did Jesus say we must do if we want to bear much fruit?
All righty. Thank you for that quiz question. I just love quiz time. All right, now we are jumping into our More Like Him segment. We are looking at Esther chapter 6. A quick recap from yesterday. We were looking at chapter 5. We kind of went all the way through chapter 5. Basically, Esther got up the courage after fasting for 3 days. She had the whole bunch of Jews in the city fasting for her. She approached the king. She approached the king, her husband, multiple times and in a very feminine, soft, submissive way, in a way that would appeal to his honor and his ego, but also show that she was in her proper place. She dressed appropriately. She showed respect in every single way possible. She supplicated to him and requested this thing. He, even before he knew what was up, he was like, hey, let me know what you want. I'll give you even up to half the kingdom. He said that twice in chapter 5. And she didn't reach out and grasp half the kingdom. She was just like, I have this serious request and I need you to help me out here. And so she basically made that request at the first banquet, and she said, please come to the second banquet and we'll talk more then. All right. So we haven't gotten to the second banquet yet. Right. This is between banquet one, banquet two. The king's a little bit drunk. Haman's a little bit drunk. Esther's in her right mind 100%. Like, she's been fasting for the last 3 days. Now she's eating, but I don't think she would have been drinking very heavily, certainly not to the extent that the king and Haman would have been up to. She has to keep her head on her shoulders. They don't know what's up. But then Haman went home and he was happy, and then he saw Mordecai and then he was grumpy because he's like, I hate that guy. Let me go hang him on a gallows as soon as possible. He went home. His wife and his friends were like, yeah, get it happening. And then we'll see what happens next. So let's jump in now to Esther chapter 6. Could you read out maybe the first three verses for us, please?
Okay, Esther chapter 6, verse 1 to 3. On that night could not the king sleep, and he commanded to bring the book of records of the chronicles.
Okay, hold on. So he's just had a big party, and he's drunk. Do men usually fall asleep when they're drunk, or do they stay awake and stay buzzed?
They sleep.
They usually knock out. Yeah. So this is very unexpected for the king to be wide awake after having a great party, great food, great wine.
Yeah, struggling to sleep.
That is very unusual. And that's, we just want to keep that in mind. Keep going, please.
And they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the king said, "What honor and dignity hath been done to Mordecai for this?" Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, "There is nothing done for him."
All righty. So we've got the king, he's sleepless, he's like, I can't fall asleep, my brain's too active or whatever is going on. So he calls his servants in the middle of the night, "Please bring me the most boring record book you can to help me get to sleep," essentially. Like, help me count my sheep here, yep. Right? So they come, they start reading, they're like, yep, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this other thing happened, and oh yeah, this guy Mordecai, he told of a plot, and your life was saved. And the king was like, hold on. Oh yeah, I vaguely remember that. Yeah. Just remind me a second. So what happened next? Like, what did we give that guy? Like, that is something that of course, he's still drunk at this point,
yep.
And he's a very generous kind of guy in general.
Yes.
Even, like, he's just so interested in wealth and display and honor.
Yes.
And we need to talk momentarily about honor and shame cultures, because that's not something that we here in Australia, Westerners, typically think about. Maybe some of our immigrant friends who come from shame honor cultures are a little more familiar with. Is this something that you're more familiar with from your
yes.
home country?
Yes,
there so is. So where are you from originally?
I am originally from Malawi. But I grew up in Zimbabwe.
Okay.
And right. There is something about the family name.
Yeah.
You got to make that family name be revered in the community.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very important.
Okay.
It's all about honor.
So in Australia, in the West, we're a very individualistic society. So every person does things that they think is best, and it doesn't matter how that impacts your family, your parents, your siblings, or the wider community. So long as it feels good to you, you should do it. That's kind of the general approach that we have here. But you're saying that in your culture,
it's different.
You have to think your actions impact everyone around you in your stratus in society.
Yes. And there are times when we were caught out misbehaving in the neighborhood, the story would get home before us.
Yeah.
And you knew you would be in trouble.
Yeah.
Because somebody who knew your parents would say, those children should not be doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. So this is the kind of society that the king and all these people are living in, right? And so the king is thinking, how can I honor this man? Have I honored this man? And then the servants say, no, you didn't do anything. He's like, well, I have to honor him. Yeah. He's done something honorable. Like, I have to actually reward that. He deserves it, and he should be made known for what he's done. So he's thinking, oh, what am I going to do here? Let's keep reading in verse 4, please.
And the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him.
Hold on a second. So we've got Haman, who's coming in. He's had his friends and his wife say, yeah, you should definitely get that guy Mordecai hanged on the gallows. Go and get that sorted out ASAP.
Yep.
And then you can be happy and go to the second banquet.
Yep.
And then we've got the king, who should be drunk and fallen asleep, who is wide awake for some unknown reason. And I think this is a spiritual warfare moment.
Yep.
I think this is God and the angels keeping the king awake to keep Mordecai alive.
To see which power will hold sway. I mean, will the gallows happen, or will Mordecai be rescued?
Exactly. And so there's Haman. He's coming in. He's like, I'm going to get this guy.
Yeah.
And then the king's like, what of my courtiers are hanging around at this time of night? Is there anybody there? I need to sort this situation out immediately. And they're like, well, Haman's here. Like, he's your best mate. He's like, yeah, bring him in. Talk to him. So what happens next?
And the king's servant said unto him, behold, Haman standeth in the court. And the king said, let him come in. So Haman came in, and the king said unto him, what shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart, to whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself?
Oh, goodness. So what a guy. So of course,
I'm the one.
Who else would the king want to honor? Like, he'd love to honor more than me. I'm his best friend. We are good mates. there's no one else as great as me. It's a very, like, I feel like if Scaffy was here, he would do a particular impersonation at this point, maybe a Trump impersonation. Ah, oh, there's no one as good as me, right? That's what he would say. So Haven's coming. He's like, of course he wants to honor me. Let me tell him all of my heart's desires so he can do it for me. So
he wants to surprise me, but I already can tell that it's all about me.
It's all about me. So tell us, what does he say?
All right, what verse were we on? Verse 7. And Haman answered the king, for the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let the royal apparel be brought which the king useth to wear, and the horse that the king rideth upon, and their crown royal which is set upon his head. And let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man withal, whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the men whom the king delighteth to honor.
Wow. Oh, what a glorious day that would be, hey? Gets to dress in the king's clothes, gets to sit on the king's horse, gets paraded around by one of the most important other guys in the kingdom, saying, this is what you'll all experience. If the king wants to honor you, then this is what will be done to you. Everyone should do amazing things so that the king will love you and do this to you.
And I can imagine he's thinking Mordecai is going to see this.
Yeah.
I'm wearing everyone's the king's robe, the crown, his horse.
He's already demanding that people bow down and worship him like a god already.
Already.
And now he wants to be paraded as the king, essentially in the king's own outfit, on the king's horse. All right, let's keep going. What does the king say to this?
Then the king said to Haman, make haste and take the apparel and the horse, and as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is heartbreaking.
Haman's like, he's saying, make haste, go, hurry up. Oh, no, he's saying it for the
Mordecai.
Wrong. The guy that I was just coming to ask if I could kill him. Now he wants me to honor him and do all this stuff that I wanted done to me. Oh, no, that is the most embarrassing, most shameful thing that he could imagine. And that's now bringing shame to him in front of his friends and family.
And the king says, let nothing fail. It's got to happen.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
It is now time for a quiz answer and our second quiz question. Please, producer Shell.
What did Jesus say we must do if we want to bear much fruit?
Die.
That can't possibly be true.
Oh, okay.
Just think it through. That is not possible for how we can bear fruit.
All righty.
Okay.
What's the actual answer, please?
Abide in him.
Righty-o. Die to self, you know?
That's right. Dying to self was one way, that's for sure. But all right. Our next question.
Yep.
What sign did God give to seal his covenant with Abraham? What sign did God give to seal his covenant with Abraham? You can find that one in Genesis chapter 17, 10 and 11. Our number is 0491-064-669. 0491-064-669.
I know exactly what it is. I can't think of the word off the top of my head.
Okay, well, write it out the best you can without... Yeah, I think Josh is in the same predicament here right now.
Stolen from our minds.
What sign did God give to seal his covenant with Abraham? So Lindsay has it right. We have two correct answers in studio. How about you text us in what you think that correct answer is?
Well, stuck in the corner of my head.
I still can't think of the word, but I made a hand gesture, which helped.
Yep.
Alrighty, let's jump back into Esther chapter 6. We're about halfway through. And what's just happened was that Haman's come in to ask the king, can I kill Mordecai. And instead, the king is like, how can I honor Mordecai?
Yep.
Haman, help me out here. Haman gives him a great idea, thinking it's all about him. However, it's not all about him. In fact, it's all about the guy he wants to kill. Yep. So then the king tells him, oh, that's a great idea. How about you go and do everything you just said to Mordecai? He's like, oh my goodness, I want to like hide in a hole in the ground. Oh man. So after he parades Mordecai all around the city, then what happens? Let's keep reading.
So we're on verse 11.
Verse 11.
Then took Haman the apparel and the horse and arrayed Mordecai and brought him on horseback through the street of the city and proclaimed before him, thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor.
Now, I could imagine he's like saying the words, but he's like scowling while he's doing it.
You know, it's if I were Haman,
yeah,
I would start pretending like I'm excited.
Yeah.
This is where you got to say, you know what? Things have changed. Let me just look like I'm Mordecai's close buddies. What would you do?
Oh man,
he couldn't pull that poker face off.
No, he couldn't.
He hated
Mordecai.
So much hatred.
Yeah.
And like now, literally, physically, we have Mordecai sitting on horseback, looming over Haman in this moment. That's poetic.
That's poetic. Who God blesses, no man can curse.
Yeah. This is Haman, the guy who's wanting to kill Mordecai and all the Jews because of the fact that Mordecai refused to bow down and worship Haman. And now we have Haman being forced to extol Mordecai publicly in front of everyone throughout all the streets of the city. How crazy. How the turntables, you know? How the tables have turned.
Yes. They have turned for sure. They have turned.
How the turntables is a quote from a silly show. But anyway, let's keep reading
verse 12,
yeah.
And Mordecai came again to the king's gate, but Haman hasted to his house mourning and having his head covered. And Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men and Zeresh, his wife, unto him, if Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews, before whom thou hast begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but thou shalt surely fall before him. And while they were yet talking with him, came the king's chamberlains and hasted to bring Haman unto the banquet that Esther had prepared.
Wow. All right. This is a dark foreboding moment for Haman. So he goes home, he's head down, he's mourning, his head is covered, he's all upset and angry and just having a really terrible day at this point. And he's probably a little bit hungover while he's at it.
Yeah, but you know, what's also sticking out to me is he thought he was in control of the situation, he's trying to process everything, and all of a sudden, he's reactive, and the guys are coming in and saying, hey, it's time to go to the king's banquet, and he's still trying to process what has just happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But the really interesting thing that stands out to me is verse 13. When he told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him, his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him. Why do you think the fact that Mordecai being of Jewish descent was significant enough for them to comment on it?
Good question.
So remember, I don't know if you were here the other day when we were talking about the fact that Haman was descendant of Agag, the king of the Amalekites, and that Mordecai was descended of Kish, who was the father of Saul. So descendant of Saul, the king of the Israelites. And it was Saul it was his job to kill every single last Amalekite. And then he didn't do the complete job. Then Agag got away, had more descendants, which has led to Haman's existence. So these are ancient bloodline enemies.
Wait, is it Agag who got away? Because Agag was killed by...
So Agag himself didn't get away, but probably his wife did.
Okay, yes.
And his descendants. Yes, okay. Yeah. Yes, so because Samuel came and executed him. Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right.
So we have here Zeresh and the friends pointing out the fact that, this is a deterministic thing. Remember, they come from a religion of determinism where if a lot is cast, they believe it was the will of the gods for something to happen on a particular day at particular time in a particular way. They really believed that the spiritual realm was somehow in control of the actions or the fate. Now, we don't believe that as Christians.
Yes.
We believe that we have free will, that God allows us to choose our path. But we also see in Proverbs that the righteous will be cared for, but the wicked and the foolish will fall, right? And they will they will not get back up.
Yes.
So it's interesting here that Haman is an evil, wicked man, and his own friends and family can see that somebody who is descendant of the Jews, who, you know, back in the time of the Jews coming into the land of Canaan, all the Canaanites were terrified of the Hebrews, right?
Yes.
They were terrified because everywhere they went, their kingdoms were falling over, right? Literally, Jericho's walls fell flat and crushed people in the city, right? So everywhere they went, the people were terrified. And even now, generations, hundreds of years later, there was this sense of, oh, the Jews are a blessed people. And if you come up against them and you're beginning to fall, like, this is your actual, like, beginning of your downfall. This is the fate that you're about to experience. This is not going to go well for you, no matter how much you try to exalt yourself in this kingdom and be best mates and drinking buddies with the king. This is not going well for you. His own wife prophesied that over him.
But I also see an element of them distancing themselves from Haman.
Mm.
It's almost like he's on his own already. Like they're saying, you know, your plan. But all of before that, they were, you know, conspiring together.
Yeah.
But now it's almost like they're distancing themselves.
Oh, that's bad for you, bro. I'm out. See you later. Okay, let's keep reading. So, yes, it says, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall. This is deterministic language. Yes. This is going to happen. Just so you know, you're going to fall or you're going to die very soon. And just as they're saying this, while they were still talking with him, telling him this, then there's a knock at the door. The guards have come, or the eunuchs have come, and they're like, hey, Haman, let's go to the party.
Yeah, exactly. Now the party is now a pity party.
It's a pity party. All right, let's keep reading in chapter 7.
So the king and Haman came to banquet with Esther, the queen. And the king said unto Esther on the second day of at that banquet of wine, what is thy position, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? And it shall be performed even to the half of the kingdom. You mentioned this earlier on, right?
Yes. So he said it twice in the previous chapter. He's now said it a third time. Yeah.
Wow. Then Esther the queen answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition and my people at my request.
Mm. Okay. So queen and... So from the point of Esther going into prayer and fasting, it's at this point that she's no longer referred to just Esther. She's now referred to as the queen single time from this point on in the story. The queen answered, and she once again speaks about, if I have found favor in your sight, and if it pleases the king, she's still supplicating. She is not bossing him around. She is begging and asking and requesting. She is saying, hey, if you still like me, if there's still something in your heart that is affectionate toward me, please give me what I'm asking for. And it is a serious thing, and I would not have come to you if it was not life and death. All right, keep reading for us, please.
Verse 4. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and for bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although my enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, who is he and where is he that durst presume in his heart to do so? And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen.
My version says he was terrified before the king and the queen. Yeah, it's so interesting. So she says, if my people had only been sold as slaves, I wouldn't have done anything. But this is life and death. And I have an actual enemy and he's trying to kill me and my people. And the king's like, what, my favorite queen? No, I can't allow this.
How did that happen?
And he's obviously, you know, a very masculine man, very protective of his woman. He's like, who would dare attack my favorite queen? And she's, you know, given him two banquets of wine in a row and they've been having a great time. He's like, no way. I love this woman. No one is going to dare touch her. Who would do that? And so she says, it's this Haman, and probably points a finger and says, it's this guy.
Yeah. This wicked Haman.
This wicked Haman. So then verse 7.
Verse 7. And the king, arising from the banquet of the wine in his wrath, went into the palace garden. And Haman stood up to make request for his life to Esther the queen. For he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. Then the king returned out of the palace garden into the place of the banquet of wine. And Haman was fallen upon the bed whereon Esther was. Then said the king, will he force the queen also before me in the house?
Yeah. Okay, so the king gets up super angry. Oh, no, it's Haman. And he gets up and he leaves. He goes out into the garden. And perhaps he's grabbing his guards, or they're just, you know, with him anyway. He goes out into the garden for a moment. Haman is terrified. He gets up. He's absolutely terrified and he's pleading. But remember, he's a bit drunk still. So yes. He doesn't have full control of his arms and legs.
Yes.
And in his drunkenness, he falls across the queen, which does not look good. And remember, he's also just been accused by her as trying to kill her and her people. Then the king walks in as Haman has tripped and fallen across the queen, and it looks like he's trying to rape her.
Yes.
In his own house.
Wow.
So what happens next?
As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And Habona, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, behold also the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman had made for Mordecai, who had spoken good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him thereon. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified.
Wow. What a crazy plot twist, hey? Haman's prepared this gallows for Mordecai. Then only a few hours before this moment, his own wife and friends said, you're about to fall. Like, you're going to come to your downfall. You might even die because of this.
Yep.
He's got a sense of foreboding as he goes into this banquet. And then at the banquet, he's accused of attacking the queen and all of her people. And then he physically looks like he's attacking the queen.
Yep.
There's absolutely no coming back from this. He literally fell. Remember, his friend said, you're going to fall.
Yes.
And it's not just a metaphorical thing. It's a physical thing that literally happened. He physically fell, and then when the king came back in with the eunuchs and the guards, they covered his face. So they put like a sack over his head. And then one of the eunuchs was like, hey, I don't know if you knew about this, but there's a gallows. I don't know if the eunuch had only just found out about that, or if it was something that they knew about, but they just kind of kept quiet. Like, we'll just see what happens. But the moment was now to let the king know this guy was going to kill your good mate Mordecai, who saved your life. How about we do something with that instead?
Wow.
So the king says, hang him on it. And then the king's wrath subsided. Wow. What a crazy, crazy story.
What a drama.
But you know what? This points forward to, or it points out the overall theme of the great controversy, right? Yes. Haman is representative of Satan. He's the one who is out to get God's people.
Yes.
Which are represented by the Jewish people in this story. And instead of Haman or Satan prevailing in this story, Haman and Satan come to their own downfall in the plots that they have against God's people. And then Haman and Satan are both ultimately punished and put to death, and sin is no more.
Yes.
Isn't that a cool, like, little microcosm of this great story of sin and God's goodness
and his righteousness?
And his righteousness.
This should give us confidence in God's plan for humanity.
Yeah, absolutely.
His plan will never fail.
Yeah.
Amazing.
What a wonderful story. And now, Producer Shell, can we have our quiz answer?
Indeed we can. So pretty quiet text line so far this morning. But yeah, Dave, I got that one right. Well done. Our answer was circumcision. That was the sign that God gave to Abraham way back in Genesis. Yes. So
also, Valmai got that correct.
Oh, good news. Good news.
Yeah. Congratulations, guys. All right. So, yes, it was circumcision. Now, after the news, we are going to be having a great lineup of topics we're going to be discussing. We're going to be talking about the strong gambling reforms in New South Wales.
That's good news.
We're going to be talking, unfortunately, about the death of Dolly Parton at the age of 80 after that. We're going to be interviewing Jennifer Skews about dealing with anger, and in our 1 Corinthians 16 study, our encounter with God, we're going to be learning about stewardship and faithfulness.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.